Next up on Off Duty, chef, restaurateur, author, icon, Marcus Samuelson.
Helping you enjoy the finer points of food and drink. This is Off Duty from the Wall Street Journal.
Hello, and welcome to another Off Duty podcast, where we talk about food and drink and the people who so kindly provide those things for us. I'm Beth Cracklauer.
And I'm Kevin Sintemong.
Today, we're talking to a chef whose restaurants in the U.S. and Sweden and beyond have earned the highest of accolades. He's a James Beard Award winner, the author of a critically acclaimed and very moving memoir. Welcome to the podcast, Marcus Samuelson.
Thank you for having me. I'm a huge Off Duty fan. Such a big fan that I called my book Off Duty. How about that?
Wow.
Wow, yeah. That incredible. Is the highest form of flattery. Well, I mean, it almost seems kind of silly. To
great, great.
Yeah? Good, good. It seems sort of ridiculous to even introduce you. You're kind of as well known as a chef can be at this point. Listeners might know you from Top Chef Masters, where you won the top prize in season two, or from your memoir, Yes, Chef, which I have to tell you, I loved so much. Yeah. To be honest, I get, like 12 chef memoirs across my desk every day. But yours was really something different and really personal and honest, and I loved it.
It was fun. I mean, I wanted really to express the journey, what the journey from anonymous labor as cooking was when I started to a very visible labor today, what it has become, and, my journey as from boy to chef, to man,
Well, I would love to, if you could just talk a little bit about that again for like the two or three listeners who are not familiar with your trajectory. You were born in Ethiopia, you came up and were trained in Sweden. Yeah. What brought you to the United States to pursue your career here?
No, but I've also come to, I understand that, being adopted and being raised in one family and coming from another race, I have a tremendous opportunity to unpack race and talk about mixed families and being an immigrant and within all of that, being a chef. And that, when you are that person, you don't think about that as a unique narrative, but you realize as you travel the world that it's very unique. Every kid is not born in Ethiopia, raised in Sweden, and cooking at the White House. You know what I mean? That's a rare perspective. And I wanted to sort of tell that story. And every day when I travel, people come up to me every day. It's like, oh, we got this from Yes Chef. We're about to adopt a baby. Or my cousin always wanted to be chef. We got this from Yes Chef. So it's always these different, oh, thank you for helping me explain Harlem. Or, Like people take different things from the book, which I love, And I never thought about that when I created a book,
Right, right. So, now, so when you first got here, you ended up in charge of the kitchen at Aquavit at a very young age, I think in your early 20s. Was that intimidating?
It was intimidating maybe, but also I came from three-star Michelin restaurants in France where I didn't speak great French.
Uh-huh.
That was more intimidating to me. It was a great restaurant. There was some structure there, and all I had to do was cook. I couldn't even manage at that point. So it looked maybe intimidating from outside looking in, but I was kind of comfortable. And I think just this idea of, at that point, I've been immigrant 5 times in 5 years.
Uh-huh.
Those situations was much more intimidating, working in Japan or working in Switzerland where people spoke French and German and Italian. Those were much, much, much more tougher environments for me than actually cooking in New York in a Scandinavian restaurant.
Right.
And I think it should be pointed out, again, for people who aren't familiar, Aquavit, you were cooking Swedish food there, which is an idiom you were presumably pretty comfortable in.
Mm-hmm. Well, for me, it's always about thinking about what's great, what's my point of view, and the Scandinavian food that we cooked there, at that point, it wasn't like the day like today when people know about the new Nordic and Scandinavian food. Aquavit and the job where I was doing there was also about introducing New York and the world to Scandinavian it's almost about setting up this moment that we have now, where people go to Copenhagen and Stockholm to dine, which was never the case before, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's a very different environment than today. You know, it's also internet and food wasn't really connecting at that point, and which is, you know, it's easier and harder at the same time, you know?
Right. Yeah.
Right. Now, so what made you decide to open Red Rooster in Harlem?
I want to actually see if I could stretch sort of the footprint of dining a little bit more. Food chain, we're just working in Midtown for me,
mm-hmm.
became less democratic. And I came to America because I really believe that food can be really, you know, democratic in a different way. And looking at inner cities to me, where a magical place like Harlem that I felt was really underexposed, and I wanted to cook of a neighborhood and of a place, not in a great place where only wealthy people came to. You know, I didn't grow up around those in that scenario, and you know, Yashef explains that. So to be in Harlem where, you know, bankers can come, but so can people. There are teachers, and so can tourists, and so can Harlemites. So creating this inclusive experience was really the key to create a neighborhood restaurant.
Right, right.
And so you're interpreting this classic American cuisine in the heart of this neighborhood that has such history. So many people, you know, emigrated from the southern United States to that neighborhood in the, you know, the teens and 20s and 30s.
Yeah.
And, you know, so many different influences have shaped your cooking. Just living in New York, you're influenced by cooks from all over the world all the time. What are some cuisines or ingredients that you're kind of excited about right now and maybe experimenting with or seeing a lot of around town?
Yeah. Well, I think there's also about going from a neighborhood to a community. There's a lot of neighborhoods in New York, but Harlem for me is also community, right? And how does that community become, both by immigration and but also the migration, right? So,
mm-hmm. yeah,
yes, we look at ramps and peas because it's spring, but we also look at, you know, neck bone and oxtail because it's part of the narrative of the migration, right? So when you cook from a neighborhood and a community, we always want to be seasonal, but we also want to cook with a narrative. So, you know, being Scandinavian and African, I always will have Berbere and some smoked salmon and gravlax on my menu.
Mm-hmm.
But that might be presented, but so I will also have fried chicken. So I don't look at barriers of what one place can be only. I really think about it from, I'm in a neighborhood that happens to be a rich community, that this is the fabric that how it was created. So staying seasonal is very, very important, but also constantly have in mind the place. So from vegetables, I mean radish, of course, different types of radishes, peas, ram, soft shell crabs. You know, going from winter into spring is always the most exciting time for a chef. Thinking about how we can go to lighter vegetables. I think it's, you know, spring is very vegetable forward. So, but that also takes place in how we think about Harlem. You know, like when I started cooking there, there was not farmers markets there. Now we have five. You know, another part of the evolution is our food festival that we're going to have next week, Harlem Meetup, from May 19th to May 22nd. Part of what we're doing with Harlem Meetup is also back engineering in better farmers market, creating a hospitality community. So I think that the place always guide me of what type of ingredients the neighborhood needs in terms of actually a place, but also what type of ingredients we can pack the farmers market with. They're not exclusive to me.
Right.
Can you talk a little more about Harlem Eat Up and what's going to go on there and who's involved?
Yeah. So, you know, part of creating Red Rooster, I always want to sort of expand the neighborhood in terms of and highlight the small business entrepreneurs that are in Harlem that I always felt were underexposed. 7 years before I opened the restaurant, I moved to Harlem, and I started to see great food in, you know, after church, or there was amazing food. You know, we would think about the food trucks, but there weren't really food trucks. There was all these, like, you know, you go to the barbershop, someone was selling cookies, you know. So it's all these amazing people that, for me, were staples in the community. But I knew about them because I lived in Harlem, but if you didn't have the keys to that, you New Yorkers didn't know. So I was like, what if we create a food festival a la, you know, great food and beverage experience? And that's really where Herb and I started to think about, what if we can create Harlem Eat Up? So we went to the staples like Sylvia's and, you know, Cecil and Melba's, and then we reached out to East Harlem. And now, you know, we have restaurants like Mountain Burke, where Andy from Pock Pock's going to cook, or we have the Stroll, where 2,000 people a day is going to come to, and tons of stuff up for free. So we wanted to create an inclusive food festival that can highlight the neighborhood, but also can highlight the restaurant community. Because the ultimate goal is, like, one day when a young kid puts "I worked in Harlem" on their resume, you want that to mean something. The way that if you say you put in "worked in Yountville" does, or say that you work in France does, right? And I think one restaurant can't create a community, but we can definitely be an engine, you know, so to that. And it's also about job creation. You know, I have over 200 employees in Harlem between Street Burger and my office in Red Rooster, and that matters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Now, do you think New York's a different city, for better or for worse, than the one you came to 20-plus years ago as a young chef? How has the dining in the city changed?
New York is a total different city, I think it's not about – it's sort of about acknowledging that, and the way we engage in the city is very different, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, the food scene in Brooklyn, the food scene in Queens has changed. The food scene in Harlem, there was very much Midtown-centric when I came to New York, and downtown changed that, and eventually that migrated over to Brooklyn. And now, you know, each neighborhood is really challenging the Manhattan, which I think is great. You know, it's probably Bronx going to come next and so on. So rather than saying things weren't as good as before, I think consumers today have so much access. You know, I've had, you know, the other day I was cooking, you know, in the middle of Chelsea with Pure Leaf and the launch of the new drinks. Every consumer knew about Fuji apples, you know, and it forces people, companies, neighborhoods. Like, every neighborhood has a great restaurant today. You know what I mean? Like, craftsmanship is something that I know is very, very important to the consumer today. And every neighborhood can say, hey, we have a restaurant or a bar that cares about craftsmanship. That was not the case when I came to New York. So I think, yeah, it's not worse than it was before. It's actually much better. It just has transported into, it's not owned by one place. It's actually Harlem got it, Brooklyn got it, downtown got it. And so they challenge every neighborhood, which I think is good.
Yeah. Well, what's coming up next for you specifically and for the Marcus Samuelson Group beyond Harlem Meet Up?
Well, there's not that much beyond Harlem Meet Up. We're a week before Harlem
Meet
Up. The goal is really big for us. So after that, sure, I can't really think about what's coming up next, but I know I'm going to be super excited about spring and summer. My wife and I are going to have a baby, so we're very excited about that. So that's
the
congratulations
thing that we are super excited about. So I need to prepare for it. So,
yes.
It's just constantly evolving as a person, as a chef, and as a New Yorker. I love that. And the fact that I can tell my story through food and people support that is something I don't take for granted. I'm very, very excited about.
That's fantastic. Well, everybody should head up to Harlem next weekend for Harlem Meetup. Marcus, thank you so much for taking the time at what must be a very busy time to talk to us today.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Marcus.
I appreciate you guys, and I'll see you soon. Thank you for having me on, guys.
Thanks a lot. And that wraps up another Off-Duty podcast. For more podcasts, check us out at wsj.com/podcasts. Follow us on Twitter at @WSJPodcast. And become a subscriber on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, and now look for us on the Google Play Music app on Android devices. And as always, if you like what you hear, tell a friend.